The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I said this yesterday on the show, and I actually have said this a number of times. I am fascinated with where the Raiders are going to play next season, because part of me thinks that it's just hysterical that the Oakland Raiders can't find a place to play NFL football in this country. And because it's the Raiders, it makes the story even more enjoyable. The fact that they're moving to Vegas, they're leaving a city, the city doesn't want them, and they can't find a place to play. Well, there's a new player in the mix, if you will, in terms of landing the Raiders. Birmingham, Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama wants to share the Raiders with Tucson, Arizona in 2019. Okay, Birmingham, great barbecue. If they're going to play, they're going to play at Legion Field. Whew, yikes. If the Raiders play at Legion Field, I'm going to go down to see a game. I swear. I don't care when it is. I will go to Legion Field to see a game. I saw South Carolina play UConn at Legion Field. And it's historic. It's where Alabama used to play before they built Bryant-Denny Stadium. I get it. But my God, it is old. And I don't want to disparage the place, but it's not up to the standards that you would expect of NFL stadiums. And again, they're not trying to find an NFL stadium. They're not trying to find, the equivalent of Jerry's World. But you can
just
do better than
to
Legion
find a
Field
place to play.
give them a a field with some goalposts. Wouldn't it be weird though if the Raiders end up, if this story actually comes to fruition, if they actually played four games in Birmingham, Alabama, and four games in Tucson, Arizona for the 2019 season?
Don't knock it, man. It'll be fantastic.
I think if you're the NFL, you make this happen, right?
Yes,
you just go,
you know what?
You guys got it.
Hey,
you guys find out
immediately if NFL would work in Alabama. You already know college football does.
Yep, exactly.
And why not NFL just start, infiltrating, college football's sacred holy land?
According to City Council President William Parker, he says the Raiders in Birmingham is a great marriage waiting to happen. That's a very bold statement. And you know what? I'm going to bet on that marriage. You're getting a gift from me if you could pull this off, William Parker in Tucson.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
You know what I'm loving about the Antonio Brown situation that is being it's been like this for the last couple of weeks. That if you go to Twitter or you go to newspapers where there's a columnist who will write about Antonio Brown and like, could he work here, right? Inevitably, you look down the list of comments and it's a majority of people that take the high road on these kind of things. And they go, nah, man, we don't need him. We don't need his distraction. I wouldn't want my team. It's almost universal. Like, there's hardly any fan base that's universal in, no, let's take the begrudged wide receiver, the guy that made a mess of his own team situation, the guy who walked out on his team when they needed him the most, and let's bring him here because it'll work. I guess the only fan base would be the New England Patriots, because they have seen this kind of thing before, and they believe that their team will not be distracted at all by anybody at any time ever. And that says a lot about them, and it says so very little about fan bases who believe that their teams just couldn't handle the freight train of destruction that is Antonio Brown. And I'm looking at you, Denver. Right? I mean, I follow a lot of people in Denver after spending 10 years there, and the Antonio Brown to the Broncos situation is always met with, I'd rather my team lose every game than have Antonio Brown on the roster. What? You don't trust that your team you think your team is just going to fall apart if Antonio Brown shows up there? Just melt? Like, there's nobody in the locker room that will just straighten this out, or them as John Elway as a president will not come in and go, you know what, fine, we're not going to have you around. You're gone. We'll cut you. Whatever it is. Like, look what the Patriots do. It's amazing that we can't get other teams to sort of implement that, because I think every one of us want teams that at least do that right. All right, that at least do if you want the Patriot way. I think we want teams that do it at least that way. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. The Patriots will take a person and will use them until they can't use them anymore, or until it becomes too risky to use them, and then they're totally fine with parting ways with that individual. And I think every team in the NFL should try to copy that. Because if you think your team is so fragile that an Antonio Brown coming into the team will wreck any good thing you may have. Look, the Broncos are terrible, and they don't want Antonio Brown. Even if Antonio Brown behaved, they couldn't use him. Well, they don't have a quarterback that could get him the ball anyway, so it doesn't really matter. And wide receiver, I think, is a weird court position when you're building a championship, because you need a wide receiver, but you also need a quarterback, and you need an offensive line that can protect the quarterback long enough for you to get open as a wide receiver. You need a running game so that the threat of you as a wide receiver is more tangible out on the field. So there's a lot of things you need offensively to make you work as a wide receiver, but just being a wide receiver that can catch a ball that's thrown to you is not a championship building formula. But nevertheless, it is amazing to me how many people, they take the high road on all of this stuff, even if it's a situation of need. Like, even if you need that guy. I said earlier, the Patriots need a wide receiver, right? Julian Edelman is pretty much the only thing they've got. They're going to need some wide receivers. Antonio Brown would be a good fit there, but he would also work there because it's either going to work or it's not, or he's not going to be a Patriot. It's not going to be the other way around. It's not going to be everything you fear about your team. Right? Whereas the Patriot fans never say, well, I don't want that guy because he'll be a distraction. They don't have distractions. Why can't more NFL teams be like that? How come I don't hear that with every other team in the NFL? How come the Patriots have been doing that for 17 years and that hasn't trickled down to other teams? Why not? Why aren't general managers looking at that going, what can I create that's similar to that? Maybe not on the same level, but similar to that. So if there's a troubled player that's talented and I could use that troubled player, that I trust my coaching staff and the organization to do the right thing and make sure he's not going to be a distraction. Now, you may say, well, they got Belichick and Tom Brady, and it's a big, yeah, that's true. You may not be able to do that if you have a young quarterback. You may not be able to do that if you have a first-year head coach that's lacking some confidence. So there are situations that the Patriots have in terms of personnel and personality that would prevent that. But, I mean, at least give it a try. I mean, try it. Go to these articles. Read the columns. Read the comments from fan bases. No, I don't want him. I don't want him on our team. Now, I don't. No. He'll be a distraction. Well, okay. So what does that mean? Some of these teams are terrible. Like the Broncos can't get better with Antonio Brown. The Broncos can't get better with Antonio Brown. People would rather the team lose than have him on the team. Here's the deal. And I'm not sticking up for Antonio Brown because I think what he did to the Steelers is awful. But the reality of it is if he were to say, listen, all I want is a change of scenery. What I was dealing with in Pittsburgh is awful. I'm looking for a change of scenery. And if I get it, you're going to get a different Antonio Brown. And people trust that. He could be a productive player. Problem is whether or not you trust it.
I just feel the Steelers would want to try to put him someplace that where he would have no success.
Well,
or very limited. Okay, maybe it's to Jacksonville.
Hold on. The only reason I would question that, and I kind of see where you're going. You have to make sure if you're going to get rid of Antonio Brown, you're going to take this $21 million cap hit.
Oh, you got to make sure you got
to get something in return. Like you can't be vindictive and trade him to a team that's giving you nothing just because you don't want Antonio Brown to be successful.
Well, I'm saying
you've got to put Antonio Brown. You give him to a team that's offering you the best package, and if it hurts, it hurts. But
I'm saying maybe Jacksonville go after some of their young defensive guys.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe that. I think that would be great.
Yeah,
I think Jacksonville would be perfect because they don't have a quarterback that can throw him the ball.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the other thing, too, how he's getting mad at Ben Roethlisberger. Is that, if you really think about it, Antonio Brown, say you were in Jacksonville from the beginning of your career, would you have the same success as you do now?
See, I don't think he's understanding this. I mean,
I don't think so either.
To have a quarterback. Look, it was a perfect storm for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. They were a team that was changing up offensively to be a passing downfield vertical team. I mean, they're not talking about, dink and dunk passes. I mean, they were like, we're throwing it downfield and we need guys who can catch the ball downfield. Like when they had Plaxico Burress, when they had Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, and Roethlisberger and Todd Haley, when he was the offensive coordinator there, they put that together and they were going to become a passing threat team, a team that will beat you through the air. And Antonio Brown benefited from that. When you could go to other teams where that's not the case, where quarterbacks can't get you the ball like Roethlisberger could get you the ball.
I mean, just, imagine if he had started out with Jacksonville and he had Blake Bortles as his quarterback.
Yep.
He might have put up a lot of numbers because, Blake Bortles, we all know this as for Blake Bortles, is that he was one of the best fantasy quarterbacks to own because Jacksonville was so far behind that in the fourth quarter, all they did was throw.
Yeah.
And Antonio Brown would have benefited from that, but he would have been on a losing team after season after season after season.
And that's what I don't get about him, is that he's complaining about things that can only happen on very few teams in the NFL, right? That just don't have the same kind of offense. They don't have the same kind of offensive philosophy. And if he gets traded to a team that can't, with a quarterback that can't do the things Ben Roethlisberger can do, he's going to disappear. Remember, this happened to Randy Moss, right? Mm-hmm. Remember when Randy Moss played for the Raiders? I can barely remember he was playing for the Raiders. Yeah, exactly. It was like, and I hated it because I remember at the time when I was working out of Colorado, and I remember going, I hate the fact that I can't, because I was a big Randy Moss fan. I didn't care about the mooning and Green Bay and all that stuff. I just liked watching him play. I thought he was a freak, and I thought he was fantastic. But when he was in Oakland and he was pretty much useless and he disappeared from everybody's radar, I thought this is not good. This is not good for the league to have this kind of talent and he's not on the highlight reel every single week. This is bad. Now when he got traded to the Patriots, the same kind of people were like, well, let's see what the Patriots can do with this guy. Yeah, well, exactly. They will Brady threw 50 touchdown passes because he had Randy Moss. And when the Giants in that first Super Bowl, when Brady had the ball, Giant fans were holding their breath because they did have Randy Moss. And there were times where Brady almost found Randy Moss at the end of Super Bowl 42. I mean, so when you're in the right situation with the right quarterback and the right coach and the right offensive system, you can benefit. But if you're not, if they trade him to somebody that doesn't have that, you're not going to hear about Antonio Brown very much. And that's just the reality. And that's the wide receiver position is so amazingly dependent on so many other positions on the team, right? You got to establish. You got to have a running. You got to have a running game that's a threat. You got to have a block. You have blocking for the quarterback, so he has time to get you open. You got to have a quarterback that can deliver you the ball accurately, right? So many of those things offensively you have to have in order to be successful as a wide receiver, and the Steelers had it. Steelers offensive line under Mike Munchak was much better down the last couple of years, right? They had Ben Roethlisberger, who could definitely throw the ball downfield, and they always had somebody that could run the ball and be a threat to run. Le'Veon Bell most of the time, last year James Conner. But now you have Antonio Brown wanting a trade. Well, tell me where you want to be traded. Look around the landscape of the NFL and tell me who you want to go to. Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco? That seems where everybody wants to is pegging you to be. With Kyle Shanahan's offense, that could work.
Yeah, but what would the Niners give up?
I don't know.
Well,
that's
who
a great
would
question.
The Niners give up?
That's a good question. I mean, we'll see.
I mean, is it? I mean, I know the common.
What about Green Bay?
Well, I mean, that's another one. But it's like, for what I was going to bring up was the common currency nowadays is just draft picks. You know, we saw with what's the guy's name? He went to Cowboys. Why am I forgetting? Amari Cooper.
Oh, Amari Cooper. Yeah.
You know, he went to the Cowboys for draft picks. And we're starting to see that, you know, you just trade, you'll trade these marquee guys, these, you know, up these young guys or whoever, you know, established receivers just for simply draft picks. Would the Niners just give up their draft pick and say, here, we'll give you our first rounder for Antonio Brown?
That's interesting. Interesting.
Because, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, it's, for the Steelers, it'd be like, you know what? Yeah, I know we're going to take a cap hit, but God, that's a pretty decent first round pick.
Yeah, they'll take the cap hit. As long as they can get a nice little haul out of it, they'll be all right.
But at the same time, is he worth the first rounder?
Speaking of Randy Moss, today's his birthday. So happy birthday, Randy Moss.
Happy birthday, Randy.
All right, there you go. 800-777-2907 is the number. Where would Antonio Brown make sense in the National Football League is our question this morning. And if you were a team that needed a wide receiver, would you trust your team to take on Antonio Brown and make him happy? That's 800-777-2907 is the number. It's 8. Michael Jordan had a great response to the streaks of James Harden and Russell Westbrook. We'll have that for you next on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you can be with us, SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. Make your tax refund go further at O'Reilly Auto Parts if you've been delaying some much-needed car maintenance. Delay no longer. Spend a little of your tax refund for your vehicle now and save on expensive repairs down the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts has exactly what you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Shelby Mast is going to join us in about 15 minutes. He's the bracketologist for USA Today. We'll talk some college basketball with him, including Duke's win last night. And is Tennessee good? I mean, they're number one, but are they good, like national championship good? We'll talk to him about that. I like Rick Barnes a lot. I think Tennessee could win the national championship, but, I don't know, beating up on Vanderbilt, who hasn't won a game in the last 11 games, really not cooking it. I mean, some of the teams in the SEC are terrible, just terrible. But, you know, they got bad teams in every league, so. We'll talk to Shelby Mast about that. Oh, so Michael Jordan, by the way, when asked which was harder to accomplish, a streak of 30 straight 30-point games or the fact that Russell Westbrook has 10 straight triple-doubles. Jordan pondered that for a little bit and said, which is harder from the player's standpoint? 6 championships, by all means. Anytime Michael Jordan can remind you that he has 6 titles, he's going to do it.
That's why he's the GOAT.
So Michael Jordan, it's so great. So great. Yeah, 30 straight 30-point games or 10 straight triple-doubles. 6 championships.
Yep.
Is it harder to build a treehouse or an addition to your home? 6 championships. Fix a carburetor or change a tire? 6 championships.
And he'll probably go to Tom Brady and go 6 and 8 years.
Exactly, right.
How'd you get your 6? Yeah, I thought
6
so.
And 17? My God, yeah. If I had played 17, holy cow.
I'd have 12.
I had 14. My God, man. How long did Michael Jordan play? Let's go see 84 to, no, 2000.
Well,
right?
do we
so
count?
He played for a while.
Yeah, but do we count the stint with the Wizards?
No, we do not.
Right?
It didn't happen. So weird. Like, I went to a Nuggets Wizards game to see Michael Jordan play when I was in Denver, and it was weird.
Yeah.
It just didn't feel right. It just felt weird. You know, he played a little. It wasn't spectacular by any means, but it was still cool to see him.
It's Brett Favre-ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know Brett Favre played for the Jets. He played for the Vikings. He might have played for another team. I don't remember. But, you know, it's like, no, just you were a Packers guy. You can't play for another team.
Yeah, you can't play for the Vikings. You're right. You can't do that. It's like Joe Montana winning playoff games with the Chiefs.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
It's weird.
Yeah, we don't count that.
It's just, I don't know. It's like in this day and age of sports where players move around a lot, it's become so acceptable. But there is a point where you have a great player and you don't want to see him wear another uniform because it's just, this is something about it. It's not, like, we used to talk about this with Brady a lot, right? Like, if Brady wanted to play to 45, would he have to do it somewhere else?
Well,
like,
right.
Would Bill Belichick go, oh, at 42, man, you don't have it anymore, and I'm going to go with my younger quarterback? And would Brady go, well, I don't want to give this up just yet? Because that's the one argument that I've always had with Favre, with the Favre detractors, because I didn't like seeing Favre retire and unretire. But at the same time, there was a part of me that went, well, I have no business telling a guy when he should play and when he should not play. Like, that's not my business. If a guy, and two, he's dealing with something I don't understand. He's dealing with something in his life that I don't have to deal with in my life. Whereas whatever career you're in, your trajectory is when you're in your 20s, you learn and learn and learn. Maybe you don't make a lot of money. And then maybe in your 30s, you start making some money and you start climbing the corporate ladder. And then by the time you're 40, you might be an executive. Maybe you're 50, you're really doing great. And then you start thinking about retirement. You know, in sports, you're in your 20s, you make a ton of money. Everybody loves you. You're great at what you do. And then it declines, and it declines fast. And then you're being told at like 35 that everything that you've lived for since you were 6 years old has to come to an end. And I mean, that's hard. That's really, really hard. So if you're in a position where you can extend that even just a little bit, like, I don't begrudge anybody for doing that.
Oh, it's no, not at all.
Conveniently for me, as a fan, for me, I just, it's hard to see. It's I don't like seeing it. I don't want to see it. I'd rather leave with the uniform I kind of know you in.
Yeah, that's what the bizarre thing. I mean, you know, I will always think of LeBron James as a Cleveland Cavalier.
Right, exactly. Like, even the Miami Heat years, it's like,
a Cavalier.
But a lot of it is because he went back and won a title there. Like,
yes.
if he never went back to Cleveland, I'd probably think of him as a Miami Heat.
Right. No, exactly. I mean, you know, we look at that way with, like, Wilt Chamberlain. I don't really remember the team he played on other than the Lakers.
Right.
Because, you know, he had some success, obviously, you know, early in his career. I'm really blanking on the team he played with.
Played for Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, thank you. Yeah. You know, I mean, he did a lot of great things there, but he didn't start winning championships until he was with the Lakers.
Yeah. I mean, look, people in Boston don't really remember Bobby Orr playing for the Blackhawks. I think Bobby Orr played one season or half a season with the Blackhawks to close out his career. Johnny Unitas played for the Chargers. Like, you know, sometimes these guys just grab a little bit of extra money and grab a paycheck and one little shot at glory, and they play for somebody else.
Or just, you don't remember them. They're trying to cheat father time.
Yeah, they're trying to cheat father time. But yeah, Jordan with the Wizards was just a weird time.
That didn't exist.
Yeah. So I don't know. I didn't like it. So. You know what I liked? I remember visiting a friend of mine in South Carolina in the early 90s, and he lived in the upstate, and we were driving by, I think they were called the Greenville Braves at the time, the minor league team, and there was a big hubbubaloo, and Michael Jordan was in town playing for the Birmingham Barons.
Right.
And I remember, like, the bus was there, and, like, there was a huge crowd outside. We drove by the stadium, it was a huge crowd, and we realized, oh, Michael Jordan's in town. Like, we didn't go to the game or anything, but when he was doing that minor league baseball thing, if you watch that documentary, he was starting to get better at it. Like, people really liked, you know, I think he batted like 200, but he was really starting to get better as the season progressed. He was really working hard at it. But one of the reasons that his baseball career came up short was because of the baseball strike that happened in 1994, that he did not want to be a part of anything that had to do with that, like scrub players or anything like that. The baseball, the owners were talking about. He didn't want anything to do with that because he was a union guy. He was a union guy in the NBA. He's going to be a union guy in baseball. He was good, even though he wasn't part of one as a minor league player. He did not feel comfortable going against a player's union in any capacity as a baseball player.
Well, that's a good cover, Tony, but we all know it's because the whole gambling conspiracy.
David Stern
allowed
him to come back, right? Yeah, the investigation went through, and David Stern said, you can now come back to play.
Exactly. That's, we know that's the real. Either that or it was when all the players challenged him that he didn't have the stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Right. And he said, oh, yeah. Oh, and the league's better off, right? Oh, the league's better without you. Oh, and he was like, whatever. I'll come right back and win three more titles.
Well, that was after he won, Save the Planet with Bugs Bunny.
That's right. Save the Planet with Bugs Bunny. God, I wanted that conspiracy to be so true.
It
that
is
Jordan
true.
Gambling's true.
Don't give up on it.
I know, but I talked to Sam Smith about it a number of times. And I even said, come on, Sam, really?
He's part of the cover.
Yeah, oh, he's part of the cover? Oh, that's true. I should know that. The guy who wrote Jordan Rules, right? He should be the one that would know the conspiracy. It's so perfect too, right? Stop gambling. Don't gamble. Well, I can't do anything. I'm not going to kick you out of the league, but I will tell you to go away for a little bit. Then you can come back. SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
Getting closer and closer to March Madness. College basketball heating up. Good conference games. Good conference stories going on. Shelby Mass joins us, bracketologist for USA Today. You can follow him on Twitter at BracketWag. Talking some college hoops. How are you, Shelby?
Oh, a little bit hungover after that Duke game last night.
He's just going to start with that. Shelby, what did that game tell us about Duke that we didn't already know, or did it tell us anything at all because we know how good this team is?
Duke in the past has had the tendency, as a lot of teams do, when you get down big, you just play out the game. And this team, I mean, you saw it earlier in the year when they still weren't a whole team, as in they hadn't played too many games, but against Gonzaga, they got down 16, 17 points, came back and tied it, but eventually lost. This team last night on the road at Louisville, down 23 with just over 9 minutes to go, and the resolve they had to come back, these guys are ready for the tournament. I'm a little bit interested to see how Louisville is going to react in their next game.
Yeah, because Louisville's lost, what, two straight now? Because they lost to Florida State the other night, right?
Yes.
All right, so let me get back to Duke for a second. So when you look at this team and you say, okay, we got young talent, and they are talented, but yet they're freshmen, and they'll tend to do things that you don't really want them to do. What does a win like this mean for them going into a tournament when Mike Krzyzewski says, we're going to win, and Zion Williamson, I don't care if you're in foul trouble. Get out there, and you're going to do some good things, and we're going to do this and this, and we're going to press. We're going to go to the 2-2-1 defense, and we're going to get our hands in faces. What does that do for a team that's young and very, very talented coming into a tournament where it's a one-and-done type of thing?
If these guys didn't have faith in their coach, which is kind of ludicrous to say that, but they should have more faith in what he's teaching them on the sidelines, during games, in the huddles, at halftime. They should know now and believe in the fact that they are a good team, and if they listen to their coach, they can achieve greatness.
Shelby Mass joins us, bracketologist for USA Today. All right, another game last night that I had interest in, a lot of it because I live in SEC country, was LSU beating Kentucky. LSU, give me a read on the Tigers. All right, they're 10-1 in conference play. The conference isn't super strong, but it's still, 10-1 is pretty good, and they've run up some wins. How good is LSU? Should I be watching for them?
Yeah, you should. LSU's good. Coming into the season, they were a 3 seed in my bracket. And they started off the year a little slow, lost a couple games that maybe they shouldn't have, but they seem to have righted the ship. They've got a lot of talent on that team, a lot of talent that not too many people are hearing about, but I think after last night, you are going to start hearing about them. Will Wade is a fine coach. I don't know if this is a team that can make a deep run in the tournament because they have a tendency to get down double digits in the second half and then make a comeback. They've done that four of their last 5 games. And that's the kind of thing that can jump up and get you in the tournament because in the regular season, if you get down double digits and don't come back, that's okay. There's another game. In the tournament, there's not. So, but they've got the resolve that they can do that. But absolutely pay attention to them. They're fun to watch. They've got some good athletes. They're going to be a tough out in the tournament, I think.
All right, the number one team in the nation is Tennessee, and Rick Barnes has got great players in Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield. What makes Tennessee threatening, and what makes them the number one team in the nation?
Well, it's the fact that they've got those two guys and a bunch of other very good players around them. Grant Williams is a guy you want the ball in his hand at the end of the game. A game earlier this year, he was 23-23 on free throws. And you want a guy that's an upperclassman, that's good at the free throw line, that doesn't turn the ball over a lot, senior guards, junior guards that can handle the ball and control the ball and not turn it over. Those are a huge asset in the tournament. So they will absolutely be a team to be reckoned with.
When you look at a team like Tennessee, how much is it that, you know, the SEC isn't all that awesome? I mean, but at the same time, you have to look at talent, and you have to look at the way that talent is coached. How are you separating what Tennessee is compared to who they're playing?
The SEC is a little bit deeper than some of the leagues out there. They're not top tier, but they're pretty close. They had a really nice year last year, sent a lot of teams to the tournament. I figure they'll have six or seven this year. There's enough decent teams that's going to challenge Tennessee, maybe not on a nightly basis, but at least on a weekly basis. They'll be ready come tournament time, and they've got some good non-conference wins, too. They beat Gonzaga.
Shelby, give me an idea on the Big 12. We've got Kansas, got Texas Tech, you got Kansas State that leads the conference right now. There's some attrition there. They're kind of beating each other up, but overall, how good is the Big 12?
I think the Big 12 is a very solid league, and cannibalize, that's the word that's been thrown around, and it fits. These guys are beating each other up. Kansas is having a bit of a down year by their standards. They've got two key players out and probably won't have them for the rest of the year. So the team you see now is the team you're going to get in March. They are beatable. I do think their streak will end this year as far as Big 12 titles. But again, it may not. You've got Kansas State's got two losses, and you got a whole bunch of teams with 4-5. So the league might have five losses at the end, and there could be three or four teams tied for that. What's going to hurt them is they keep beating each other up so much. You're not going to have a one or a two seed probably come from the conference. You're going to have a bunch of teams seeded from about 4-9, and that, you know, they could set themselves up for some nice runs. Expectations I don't think will be as high for them in the tournament because they don't have a top seed, but they're still a conference. Those teams are tough. I mean, every night is no game is a night off.
Forgive me for asking more of a personal question because I got family in that area. What happened to West Virginia? Why is West Virginia bad?
Oh, man, I don't know. I had them really high in the preseason.
Me too.
Whatever, it just hasn't worked. And that's rare for a Bob Huggins coach team. They've got talent. They had players coming back. I don't have an explanation for it. It's just one of those things. Sometimes it just doesn't click, and it doesn't seem to be doing that.
And it's weird too, because a press defense, even if you don't, if you're not talented in one particular way, you can usually get away with some of that if you're running the press really well.
Yeah, you can, and it makes me wonder, have these players kind of given up? I hope that's not the case for Huggins, but it kind of seems like they're just going through the motions these days.
All right, we love Gonzaga. They used to be the Cinderella years ago. That's been gone. But how good has got Gonzaga this season?
Well, we saw against Duke, they were a man down and still beat Duke. And they got him back for a little bit, Tilly, but he's now out for the rest of the year. So the team we saw at the beginning of the year is what we're getting at the end of the year. But they're tough. I mean, this is a coach now that has been to a Final Four, that's been to a title. He has those things on his resume. Hachimura was on that team that went to the championship game a couple of years ago. I think he averaged like 2 minutes a game or something like that. So he's got a little bit of experience there. But the bad thing for them is they're not really getting challenged out in the West Coast Conference, and that's going to be too bad if that's what their downfall ends up being.
Yeah, doesn't that happen to them a lot though? Like that seems to be a storyline with them almost every year. Like they just wait till they get to the tournament, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it kind of is, and that's too bad because they've got a lot of talent on that team. They're a deep team. There's not too many guys on the team that you can put in and where you won't trust them. You want to have guys that you may have a drop-off in talent, but as far as don't throw that guy the ball or whatever, they don't have any guys really like that I've seen.
Shelby Mast again joining us here on SB Nation Radio. Follow him on Twitter, at BracketWag. I don't like to use the word sleeper, so I don't know how best to describe them, but there's a team that's rocketing up through the rankings with a bullet, and that's Houston. I like Amani Brooks. I like Corey Davis. I like what they're doing. Give me an idea on the Cougars.
Houston is good. I mean, I had them in my preseason bracket probably around 6 or 7. I thought they'd be good. They lost some guys last year. But, man, they have really taken off. And before the committee revealed their bracket over the weekend, or the top four seeds, I had Houston on the 2 line, and I felt pretty comfortable about that. Committee saw them as a 3 seed, so I've dropped them back to a 3. But they've got 1 loss on the road to Temple, who is a bubble team. And Temple's one of those that you always hear their name in March. So there's no shame in that loss. It's 4 points and a little bit questionable down at the end. I believe there were some ref calls that were questionable. So this team is a few seconds away from being undefeated. And Cincinnati is a team that's always good in that conference, and they beat Cincinnati this past weekend. They've got another matchup with them coming up. Don't sleep on them. Guys, Kelvin Sampson's a good coach. He's been through this before. They're Final Four contenders, absolutely.
Give me an idea on the Big Ten, because here's what I'm seeing, Shelby, in the Big Ten, right? I got the top, and I've got the middle, and then I've got the like a Penn State upsetting Michigan. People were talking about Rutgers making some noise in beating some teams in the conference. Look, when you play conference teams, I get it. There's a familiarity point to it. It seems like the Big Ten is pretty competitive.
Yeah, the Big Ten, after last year, they needed to turn it around. They got
four teams
in the tournament, and this year it's looking like 9-10. I'm kind of wavering and thinking maybe closer to 8. Indiana's fallen off. Nebraska's fallen off. Minnesota's not doing so well. But you've got the upper echelon of that conference with Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, Wisconsin. Those are all solid teams that can make a run. They've got coaches that have been there. I mean, I don't want to face Tom Izzo in the tournament. I just don't. He's good. And the experience that he brings and can impart on those players is immeasurable.
Give me an idea. Michigan Final Four team last year. How good are the Wolverines again on top of the Big Ten and ranked in the top 10? How good is John Beilein's club?
They're very good. They were another team that I had kind of in the 6-7 range coming into the season, and they have taken off and played much better than I expected, probably much better than most people expected. They are a very, very good team. For whatever reason, Beilein gets it done. I hope he can win a title at some point. Not this year because I'm a Duke fan. But he's a very, very solid coach and a teacher. And that he had offers, I think, from the Pistons. It was either last summer or the summer before. And I just didn't see him going to the NBA because that's not a teaching league. College basketball is where you teach your players, and that's what he wants to do, and that's what he loves doing, and he's good at it. They're going to be a tough out this tournament.
I get up too early, Shelby, to watch Pac-12 basketball. What's that conference like? I know they've struggled in the last couple of years. They've had some good teams that have struggled the last couple of years. Where's the Pac-12?
You're not missing much by not watching. They are a dumpster fire. There's a very real possibility that they only send one team to the tournament.
And that's Washington, right? Yeah, right.
Yep.
I got a friend of mine who's married into our family. He's a big Washington Huskies, and it's the only bragging point I've got in my Pac-12 friends. She's the only one speaking out.
Yeah, the only way I think they get a second team in is if Washington gets to the finals and somebody beats them in the finals of the conference tournament, then they will send two.
I remember at the beginning of the year, like Furman was in the top 25. What happened to the Paladins? Was that just kind of fun, or were they real? What were they?
They're a good team, and I think they're at a point now where they have to win their conference tournament to get in. But they got the win over Villanova, and that's you know,
they did right.
Villanova's a little bit down, but they were the national champs last year and lost basically their starting five. So they're going to have a little bit of a lull to start the season. But Furman's good. I hate the fact that they're probably going to have to win the conference tournament. They took a bad loss at home to Samford, not Stanford, Samford.
Yeah.
And so that alone for a team like that is what could knock them out. The rest of their non-conference schedule was not that good. They needed to have a tougher non-conference to be seriously considered for an at-large bid. But it sure is going to be fun if they get in because they've got the experience of beating Villanova at Villanova. And that can carry a team through a couple of rounds of the tournament.
I agree. If they can, and especially if the SoCon could get an at-large bid, that would be kind of good for the conference. If Wofford wins the whole thing, and then you get the Paladins in somehow.
Well, I've got two teams in right now from the Southern.
Wow, that's awesome!
And North Carolina, Greensboro.
Yeah, Greensboro. I forgot about them. They're good, too. Yeah, that's right.
They're really good. 22-3. They've got a solid non-conference for a team on that level. They've got a quad one win. They've got no bad losses. If they don't take any more bad losses, they're going to be a serious consideration for an at-large bid.
You know, if in that conference tournament, I'm going with East Tennessee State. I live in Tennessee, so I follow the Buccaneers a little bit. I like the Buccaneers. I like Jeremy Rodriguez a lot, so I'm voting for the
Buccaneers. That's another thing that's good. I mean, anything that comes out of that conference, they're going to be a tough out in the tournament.
You got it, my friend. Shelby, great stuff as always. Could do this for an hour, my friend. It's good stuff as always, my man.
Thanks for having me as always.
You got it. Shelby Mass at Bracket Wag. You can follow him on Twitter. And do follow him on Twitter. He's excellent. He is excellent. He's one of those guys, and you know what? I gotta do this quick, but he's one of those guys. You could throw him a curveball and he'll catch the curveball. Right? Like you could say, like, I think Western Carolina could make the tournament. And he'd be like, no, they're 3-10. They're like, oh, okay. And then no, I think Nichols could be really good. He'd be like, nah, they're 6-20, you know, whatever it is. Like, don't mess around with Shelby Mast. He knows what he's talking about. He's got it deep. There's like 300 plus college basketball teams in Division I, and he's pretty much got them all pegged. That's what he does. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Ron, what's the best success you've ever had in an NCAA basketball tournament pool? You ever had the one year where you're like, I had Loyola Chicago going to the Final Four, and by God, they did.
None of that. I think my probably one that sticks out in my head the most is I had two regional perfect brackets after the first weekend.
Did you really?
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Overall, I had missed I think three or four total after
the
first weekend.
Thing? Oh, after the first weekend. Wow, yeah. That's pretty good.
I felt good about that, and then it all fell apart. That's normal. Yeah.
Have you ever, like, when you go, like, to these sites, like, whether it's Yahoo or ESPN or CBS, anybody that does these bracket things, you can go online and fill one out, play in a contest, you could have the craziest Final Four, and there's always somebody that has it.
Yep.
Like, there's always somebody. Like you could have, like, the most insane Final Four, like, wow, I can't believe there's two teams here that don't belong. Somebody in, like, I don't know. Was it Ames, Iowa, put it together?
George Mason made their run. Like, there was just one little old lady who had a perfect bracket. And, like, you know, she had George Mason in the final because no one would have George Mason in the final.
Right, exactly.
Ridiculous.
I had Syracuse go to the finals one year in high school, and that's when I won my pool. After that, I never win those things. I never do. I don't know why. I never do. SB Nation Radio.